Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf at Yomi Vav Basra Kaflamet Beis. We are holding right on top Boi Rava. So yesterday we learned an interesting halacha. A husband gives away all to his wife at the expense of his kids. We assume it's not a genuine gift. It was just meant to elevate her status in their eyes, to give her prestige, to protect her honor down the road after he passes away, so that she's in charge of the finances, she runs the house, she allocates the funds, and that does well in preserving her status, her stature, and her honor. Boi Rava, here comes a shaila posed by Rava. But Boi Haich, what if he's healthy and well? And he goes through this process. So he gave it all to his wife. Do we assume that it was meant as a real gift, or just to turn her into an apotropos, make her the CEO, for the reasons we mentioned? Shall we say, this halacha is strictly applicable to a shchivmara, a fellow who's deathly ill, on his way out, and he's looking to preserve his wife's status, her dignity, her honor. So we assume that's his intention. D'nichalei, because his intention is, his desire here is d'lishtam un mila, that her words should be heard, her, to preserve her influence in the family. Avo bebari, however, if he's alive and well and healthy, hakai iu, look, he's there. He's around. And they'll give her honor on account of him, meaning there's no need for him to ensure his wife's status if he's around. So in this case, we shall say that the gift was really meant as a legitimate gift. On the other hand, we can say, Bari Nami, even when he's still healthy, while he's looking for the future, he has an interest, that starting from today, she achieves this grand status in the family so that later on, her status will be preserved. Toshma ikam zeraya. We're going to try to prove one way or the other. Hakoyseh peres nechosav liyishtoi. Here comes another halacha. He formulates a document. He writes away all his peres, all the income coming in from his assets, gives it to his wife. Goyva ksivosa min hakarka. It doesn't in any way diminish her ksuba claim. Every married wife has a ksuba claim that she can actualize the moment the marriage is dissolved, whether by way of divorce or his death. So although he gave her much, he gave her the income of all these properties, it doesn't mean she forfeits her actual ksuba claim on those properties. However, lemechza, lishlish ulerevia. Suppose he gave her part of his assets, half, third, quarter. So what? Goyva ksuvasa min ashar. So even though she can no longer claim her ksuba on this half, it's hers. I mean, it's a gift. But she can still maintain her ksuba claim on the rest of the assets. What about kosov kol nechosov liishtoi? He gave away everything to his wife. Yotza olav shtar chayv. So he put all his assets on his wife's name, and then suddenly the bank comes running with a debt that was due. And this debt predates today's gift. Listen to this halacha. She loses her gift because the bank, debt precedes her gift. But she can still collect her ksuba, because her ksuba claim predates the bank's claim. V'chachamim oimrim, no, she loses it all. Tikra ksubasa, v'tamad amatanta, she loses the ksuba claim on these assets. Why? Because since she accepted them as a gift, she's not thinking in terms of, a failed gift process. She's thinking, okay, it's mine as a gift. If that's the case, I'm relinquishing my ksuba claim from these assets. Why do I need to have two claims on the same asset? She's not thinking in her mind that it's going to be discovered, that gift will be discovered as being a non-starter. She's not thinking along those lines. So she really gave up. She forfeited her ksuba claim on those properties, which case she can maintain her matana claim, but problem is the bank's mortgage predates that gift. V'nimtzes kirachas mekana mekal. So it's a metaphor, like a person is bald. She's bald on both sides. She no longer has that ksuba claim on these assets because it was converted into a gift. But she doesn't get it as a gift because the bank predates the gift. Well, I want it as my ksuba, which predates the bank. Too bad, you gave up the ksuba on these properties. V'amar b'yuda hanachte. Rabbi Yehuda the baker quotes as follows. Masa was actually a story. V'ira hadavar basa chaysi kala. This exact happening took place with my sister's daughter, my niece, Kala, who was my son's wife, my daughter-in-law. He gave her the stuff, he put the assets on her name, like sometimes people do, right? And lo and behold, the bank came and collected. So the story was presented to the Chachamim, v'amru, and they said, exactly as such, she lost on all ends. Tikra ksubasa, v'tamada matanto, v'nimtzis karachas, v'mkana mekan. Her ksuba claim is suspended. She gets it as a gift, if she can get it, but the bank precedes it. So that's it. It's gone. Of course, she still maintains her ksuba claim on any other assets that were not involved in this transaction, but she no longer has a ksuba claim from these assets. Talmud Yotzo Lav Shtar Chayv. Now let's think for a second. The complicating factor here is because there was a shtar chayv, the bank came to collect. But in absence of that element, there was no shtar chayv. So he turned around, put his house on her name. Kanya, she gets it. It's a true gift. Now, ubemai, what is this husband's state of health? Is he a shchiv mara? Why is it a gift? Va'amris, you just finished telling me la'asa elapatropos, that when a husband grants his wife all these assets, right? Kol nechasav, he didn't really mean it as a real gift. He meant to make her apatropos. Elalave bori. Apparently, we're speaking that he's healthy. Apparently, in a healthy state, a gift is a gift. Rather than merely making her apotropos, says the Gemara, no, lo'olam b'shchimera. Perhaps we are speaking about a shchimera. So why is it considered a legitimate gift? Because if you recall, yesterday we learned that in some cases, we assume he's not looking to preserve her dignity, enhance her, standing in the eyes of the family. For instance, by a fiancé, an isha who is merely engaged to him, or on the other hand, divorced from him. In those situations, if it's a gift, it's a real gift. V'Rav Avira, according to Rav Avira Mukilov, he says that we're speaking Bakulu, and all those women we spoke about yesterday, Ravina Mukilov Ishtay Arusa, Ishtay Grusha, according to Ravina's version, was regarding Ishtay Arusa, Ishtay Grusha, divorced, fiancéed, like we learned yesterday. So, it's unrelated to our discussion. We're not speaking about a regular wife, in which case it's certainly considered a gift. Amar of Yosef, Bamin Yemi, Amar of Nachman, Halacha. So what's the conclusion? Yep. Tikra ksubasa, v'tam adam atanta, v'nimtzes karachas, mekan magan. If he gave her everything as a gift, but then it was preempted by the bank, she loses the ksuba claim from these assets because she took it as a gift. She loses the gift because the bank precedes her. L'meimer le'ozal Rav Nachman basar umdeno. Now this is Rav Nachman speaking. Do you mean to say Rav Nachman is not going to follow Umdana? Our, evaluation of a person's mindset, person's state of heart, meaning, the Umdana would dictate to us that, in fact, she shouldn't be giving it up because she didn't really mean to give it up. She innocently accepted it as a gift. Now, had she have known that there's an issue with the gift, of course she would not have accepted it as a gift and relinquished her ksuba claim from these properties. So, basic, assumption assumes that she wasn't really trying to relinquish her claim. So the factor of Nachman, since bends her claim, cancels her ksuba claim, in the case that we're not going with umdina. Right? We take it straightforward. Look, you took it as a gift. You forfeited your ksuba claim. Vatanya, really? We do that? Vatanya, listen to this braisa. Harish halach b'noi, limdina sayam, a fellow son went overseas. V'shama shemes b'noi. He heard that his son passed away. V'omad v'kosav kol nuchos l'achir. Okay? In the absence of a son, he figured next best is his good chavrusa. Gave away all his assets to his good friend, non-relative. And then his son, lo and behold, mazal tov shows up. V'achakach b'noi. Matante matana. The gift is a gift. Look, he didn't indicate in his document that it was conditioned upon his son's, you know, absence. So, it's a legitimate gift. Case closed. Rabbi Shim Nasi Eimer, no, Eimat Nasi Matana. We don't give it a gift, because if he would have known that his son is still alive, like Osman, he never would have given it to the stranger. Vom Rav Nachman, or was Rav Nachman conclude on this? Halacha, like who? Kir Rabbi Shim Ben Menasya. We follow Umdana. We follow our assumption by way of evaluating a person's mindset. It's not what he had in mind. So even without technically articulating it, we assume as such. So why is the case of the gift to the wife treated any differently? Had she have known that there was any complication, she would never have forfeited her ksuba claim from these properties. Shani Hossam says the Gemara, no. There it's quite different. Because she has instant benefit from being the recipient of this fellow's estate. The nichala, she's happy. The typical law kolo, that there's a koil, there's a reputation being attached to her name. She's establishing a solid reputation of a person as being a person of integrity and honesty. Look, this husband is trusting her with the entire estate. The kasvinu ni Allah. Let it be known that it was written to her, all these lahanu nechasim, all these assets were transferred to her. That gives her instant benefit, and she's happy with that. So she's a willing partner in the process. And even if it turns out that she's shortchanged, she still went ahead. She's still considered to have gained and profited from this process. And therefore we assume that she meant to cooperate with it. Tanan Hossam, we have a Mishnah. In Maseches Peah, Koisev Nechosel Levonov. Because of Ishtar Karka Koshu. So this fellow got up and he wrote away all his assets to his sons. And he, you know, involved his wife as well. Gave her a little, you know, a little cabbage patch at the corner. Much less than she deserves for her ksuba claim. Ibduk Suvasa. That is considered a de facto relinquishment of her ksuba claim. Because she accepted that minuscule plot of land in lieu of the ksuba payment. Done. Asks the Gemara, who says that's what she had in mind? Why would you say she gives up? Mishum de kosa la karka kosh, just because you took a little piece of karka, ibduk sabasa. What makes you think she gave up everything? Omar Rav, we have three pshatim. Rav says, be mezakalin al yada. She was an active player in transferring the assets to the boys. He used her as a medium, as a shliach. She made the kinyan for them. So certainly, since she was fully cooperating in this process, without, you know, a word of protest, apparently, she was willing, she was agreeable to this arrangement. Ushmuel Omar, second shot is Shmuel, but Machalak Lefanei Avishai Sekas. We need not say that she was actually actively involved in the process of transfer, but she was there. It was done in her presence. He was allocating it to the sons in her presence, and she remained silent. Why don't you say something? Apparently, you consented. Rabbi Chanina Omar, third shot. We're speaking of the husband, instructor. Look, take this piece of property for your ksuba payment. So he explicitly indicated this is your payment, no more, no less, and she accepted it. That's a tacit acceptance, tacit admission. And really, this is a sort of a lenient twist to the whole concept of ksuba, because your typical, you know, bank wouldn't go for this, right? You wouldn't apply this rash reasoning to a, you know, a mortgage payment for a real debtor. Rather, we're speaking about an isha, her ksuba. Well, we know that an isha is very desirable. She wants to get married more than the husband. In which case, we allow ourselves this this kula that tells us that she was moichel, and that's all she gets. Tanan. Now let's move on to the next part of that very same Mishnah. Rabbi Yisya Imer, Im Kibla Aleha. So it sounds from the words of Rabbi Yossi that the preceding view that Tanakama holds, that A, the arrangement had to be recorded in a formal document. You need ksiba, and also kabbalah. Kabbalah means that she explicitly, verbally accepted the deal. That she was meichel, she gave up, she forfeited her ksuba claim on those assets given to the kids, right? So that will be the Tanakama. Comes Rabbi Yossi and rejoins. He responds like this. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, no, you don't need both elements. You don't need both components, ksiba and kabbalah. Im kibla aleha, if she verbally consented, even if there was no writing, iduk suvasa, that is sufficient to be considered a forfeiture on the ksuba claim from those assets. Mechal de Tanakama, sovar, ksiba v'kabbalah boy. Apparently, from Rabbi Yossi's words, it would indicate that Tanakama requires both elements, ksiba and kabbalah. That doesn't really fall in line with our three explanations. Said previously that it was done in front of her, or she was involved. Because according to them, there was no explicit verbal consent to the mechila. Says the Gemara, v'chitema, perhaps we can say, kula Rabbi Yossi, that in fact, the entire Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi speaking. So initially Rabbi Yossi says, look, ksiva is enough. As long as he wrote it away, it's enough, right? He wrote off all the stuff to the kids. And the question was, why? I mean, just because he did that, why she lose her claim? And that's why we had those three explanations. It was done in her presence, she was involved, etc. And then Rabbi Yossi responds, concludes by saying, look, that's one method. And Kabbalah is also a method. If she explicitly, if she verbally was Meichel, that's also another reason for the same, it would be another, you know, situation where the same halacha is applied. It's one or the other. Is that the correct pshat in the Mishnah, really? Chitema kula Rabbi Yossi v'atanya. It can't be because we have a brisa with an explanation on the Mishnah explaining the Tanakama. We'll see in a minute how we know there's a Tanakama. We're not sure, but we'll see in a minute. V'atanya. Om Rabbi Yuda. Says Rabbi Yuda, Eimasai. Now the word Eimasai is always a sort of an add-on, explanation, an elaboration. When is this so? When is this that the Isha loses her ksuba claim? Eimasai shahisa sham, v'kibla aleha. She was there and she specifically was meichel. So perhaps she was just, you know, being nice about it? No. A person would never allow his assets, you know, to be distributed and given away to other people and just keep quiet. So the fact that she explicitly said it's okay, right? That means it's genuine. But she was there, she was present when the assets were being distributed to the brother, to the kids. But you don't hear from her any verbal consent. Or kibla aleha, she was makabel. She wasn't there. Then it's not considered a de facto forfeiture of her claim. Because in the first case, she was just quiet. She wasn't makabel. She didn't verbalize a haskama. Then it's worthless. In the second case, she wasn't there. So again, she could say, look, I was just trying to make my husband happy. I wasn't, you know. So it's clear from this elaboration, cited by Rabbi Yehuda, that there is another view in this halach, another view in the Mishnah, which is Tanakama, who requires both elements, a writing away of the assets, and a kabbalah, which means a verbal mechila. As opposed to Rabbi Yossi, who concludes and says, well, kabbalah is enough. So, if according to Tanakama, you need both, which means you also need a verbal consent, that's tyufta dekula tyufta, that's a full refutation of those three explanations. Who are inconsistent with this, because they're saying you don't need a kabbalah. They're seeking to explain why it works, and she was there, and she was quiet. Nah, there's no kabbalah. And here we see clearly a kabbalah is required. Amalei Rava Rav Nachman. So Rava turns to Rav Nachman, who was actually a Talmud of Shmuel. Look, we have so many ways to explain the Mishnah. Harav, Hashmuel, Harav Yisrael, B'chanina, right? But three ways to explain the reason behind the halach. Mar, you, Rav Nachman, who do you hold like? Which view would you adopt? Mar, my spherely. Amr le, Shani Eimer, you know what my opinion is? Kivan she'asa shuta ben abonim idvok sevasa. He holds like this. So Rashi, the Rashbam explains that Rav Nachman was going with Rav Yesi, who says that all you need is a one or the other. Right? One or the other. Either a Ksiva or Kabbalah. Right? So on that, says Rav Nachman, you know what? I'm going to go with Shmuel's. I'm going to take Shmuel's approach, which was that Mechalek Lefanei Vishosekes. She was present and quiet. She was there and remained silent. That is sufficient. A basis for an assumed forfeiture. So he says like this, Amalei Shani Aymer, my opinion is, Kivin She'asa Shuta Ben Abana, once the husband turned her into a partner, with a brother, with the kids, even if he gave her a minuscule amount, making her a partner, lends to her prestige, makes her feel important, and she willingly just accepts that and gives up the rest. It's a de facto mechila on the rest. Now again, we have to explain that we're not talking about losing, period. She's not giving up her claim. The Rashbam and Amar Alef explains. He points this out that Ibduk Savasa throughout the whole sugya doesn't mean she gives up her claim. Rather, it means she gave it up from these assets. The assets that he allocated to the kids. But let's say there are other assets. Or he buys more assets later. Of course, her claim gets reactivated and reapplied to those assets. And that takes us to the next sugya. Boi Rava. Bebori Haich. So far we spoke about a fellow who's on, you know, a shchiv mara on his deathbed. What about a healthy man who went through this process? Gave his kids the matana, right? Gave it all to his kids. Do we say the same there? Mi amrin, shall we say, b'shchiv mara hu diyada de lesle v'kamachla. Perhaps this halacha is limited to a shchiv mara because she knows. This is all he has. The fact that she allowed him to give it away, that's considered a de facto mechila. Alv bebari, but if he's healthy, she figures, okay, a long road ahead of him. He'll still get lots of assets and add it to his portfolio, and I'll collect from those. Sabra, she's thinking, hadar kani, he'll buy more. Now, if it turns out that, so why bother making a fuss, and if it turns out that he doesn't get any more, she didn't really mean to be meichel, Dilma, or you can say, hashta mi alesle. Look, currently speaking, this is all he has. He has no more. If you don't like it, you should have said something. And, you know, not risk losing your ksuba payment. Take it, we leave it unresolved. We have a story as follows. With a person, Ahuda Amar Lul Palgal Bart. So he declared as follows. He was a shribmara, he had two daughters. He says, you know what, 50% of my assets goes to Rachel, my daughter. Palgal Abrat, Ufalgal Abrat, and the other half to my other daughter, Leah. And my wife gets a third of the income of the peiris. No karka, just peiris. Ikla Rav Nachman l'sura. So Rav Nachman happened to visit the town of Sura. Oyla gabei Rav Chizda. So Rav Chizda came in to visit. Rav Chizda turned to Rav Nachman with this question. Ki agav namai, what would you say about this case? He gave her something, the wife, but he didn't give her actual property. Amar Leis, he says, Hachim Shmuel. Let me quote Shmuel as follows. Even if you only gave the wife one palm tree, take the palm tree, take the fruit. Right? That allocation suffices and substitutes for the rest of the ksuba claim. Amar Leis, he says, well, you can't compare it to our case. Yeah, Shmuel speaking where he gave her part of the property. Although he only gave her the tree as long as it lasts, but tree and property are one and the same. In our case, he gave her strictly peiros. Bananas off the tree. That's not really property. Who said that qualifies? Amalei, he says, you're right. metaldi commerce. Oh, he's speaking about just, you know, objects, not property. Metaldi vadli kamina. I never meant that metaldi qualified. He gave her a little karka, as small as it is, but he gave her chashivas, he gave her something substantial, something lasting. Yeah, but just a, you know, some bananas off the tree, of course, that doesn't work. Here comes another story. His fellow got up and says, give a third of my property to my daughter, Rachel, other third to Leah, and a third to my wife. So he gave her property, a third of the property. In which case, it's considered a de facto mechila on the rest. She only has that to claim and not the rest. But now, one of his daughters, Rachel, passed away during the father's lifetime. So her allocation sort of went back to the father. Savar, a popular Meimar. So a puppy figured, Lois Shakla, Elatilsa. The wife is only entitled to collect from the third that was given to her. Amalir Afghana, no. Afghana responded, Ilu Hadar Kani. Imagine the husband, you know, the father, goes out and buys more stuff. Milo Shakla, does the wife not have a right to collect from those? Of course she does. She never gave up her claim from everything that he'll get. So here, he got more stuff. He got the third back from his daughter. And since if he would have purchased more, the wife is entitled to claim from those, here as well, Ashtanami Shakla, here as well. He got back the third from the daughter that passed away, so now the wife is entitled to collect from those third, from that third as well. Okay, let's do a quick summary of today's daf. A person writes away everything to his wife. It's just an apotropos. What if he's a bari, he's healthy? Do we assume he's trying to protect her honor, add to her dignity or not? We're not sure. What about the case where he gave her his nechassim as a matana, and the case where it's really a matana, let's say ishte arusa, ishte grusha. It turns out that the bank has a loan that predates this matana. According to the Chachamim, and the Rav Nachman passes like that, she's so excited about the fact that he trusted her and empowers her so that she's willing to accept it, even at the expense, even if it turns out that it was a failed gift, she no longer has the ksuba claim on those assets. Likewise, we learned the halacha, if a person is Kosev Nechosev Levonov, gives the Ishtar just a little piece of property, right? Dafka property. So she was Ibdo Ksuvasa. It's considered like a forfeiture of her Ksuva claim on these assets. Reason? Because she never would have let this go through otherwise. And we have some stories which further discussed and elaborated on details on this halacha. All the best to you, Natsalachara.